So I'm going to go ahead and open the hearing. This is the Subcommittee for Information Technology of Ways and Means, and the date is April 9th. And we're going to open with an overview of the State Treasury Agency IT. And come on up.
And if you could both remember to introduce yourself for the record. Thank you.
All right, good afternoon. Co-Chair Riley, and I guess the only member of the committee.
So far.
For the record, my name is Cora Parker. I'm the Director of Finance for the Oregon State Treasurer's Office. With me is Nancy O'Halloran, who is the Information Services Division Manager. And we're here today to provide you with an overview of our IT division and IT support processes. I'll begin with a very brief overview of Treasury, and then Nancy will provide you with a more detailed look at our Information Services Division and how it supports Treasury's core programs. Then we'll both discuss some of our strategic priorities and initiatives for the upcoming biennium, and we'll answer any questions that the committee might have at the end. Again, the Treasurer is a constitutional officer of the state. His authority and that of the Treasurer's office is further defined throughout Oregon Revised Statutes. Notably, Treasury supports the statewide delivery of services for investments, cash management, and debt management. And we also house the Public Funds Collateralization Program and the Oregon 529 College Savings Network. Our budget is entirely other funds. We rely primarily on charges for services to our customers and clients, and that's under a variety of different statutory authorities. And if you're wondering why I'm here today versus any of my fellow directors, it's because Nancy Schupp primarily supports the cash management division and programs. We receive most of our support from IS, and as we'll discuss in a few minutes, Nancy and I are actually co-sponsors on a couple of our major strategic initiatives.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Nancy O'Halloran. I'm the Information Services Director for Oregon State Treasury. We provide the IT services to all Treasury divisions, to all Treasury staff, and services as well to state agencies and local governments. We provide basic infrastructure, security, and service desks to all Treasury staff, as well as specialized systems for business units and Treasury customers. This slide shows some of the major systems or services used to support Treasury operations. Some of the systems are managed directly by Information Services. Others are hosted and managed by financial services providers. As you can see from the list of applications, just as Cora said, the majority of our internal application services are devoted to cash management. Our IT governance structure emphasizes partnership at every level, from strategic technology direction through daily operations to project management. Our technology direction is determined by the Executive Policy Committee based on agency priorities.
And can you tell me who sits on that?
Co-Chair Riley, we have all of the division directors, as well as the Deputy Treasurer and the Chief of Staff, and myself.
Thank you.
Our technology direction is determined by this group based, I said that part already, excuse me. All major projects are approved by this committee. And smaller projects may be approved by a combination of myself with a division director. Operational concerns are a common source of project recommendations and often require, but they still require director and CIO approval to move forward. All chartered projects have a project manager assigned. Large projects have a dedicated project manager. Smaller projects may be managed by business or technical staff. We have three general service areas: technical, application, and information security. Technical services provides basic infrastructure support, desktop, servers, switches, office automation, disaster recovery, and so on. Technical services also includes our central service desk for customer assistance. This team provides, in addition, banking operation services that ensure financial transactions are processed in a timely and reliable manner. The application services team implements and manages both purchased and custom software. They develop applications where commercial options are not available or cost-effective. We aid in the research, selection, and implementation of business software, including the integration of multiple third-party products or services where needed. The application team is also responsible for many aspects of data management, such as database administration and file management. Information security activities are not new, but as a result of legislative approval of additional resources, we have established a dedicated program, which I'll talk about more in a moment. The Information Services Division has 18.5 FTE. There's a manager responsible for each service area. In a small shop such as ours, as you can imagine, everyone wears multiple hats. Coverage is always a challenge. For example, the service desk and the operations, you'll see each of those are one FTE. They back each other up so that we have adequate coverage every day. We also, on the database administration, another single FTE, we have an application developer who provides backup services there. Our information security team and technical services team work very closely together and often as well back each other up. In this environment, cross-training is obviously critical and ongoing. Treasury has three major initiatives with varying levels of impact on IT. The first two, Information Security and Cash Management Improvement and Renewal Program, are multi-year, multi-project initiatives with significant impact on the technology and services we provide. The Investment Solutions project is much smaller and will be completed this year. It has much less impact on IT as it is basically moving from one set of services to a single, more comprehensive service. Now I'd like to provide a little more detail on the Information Security Program. As previously mentioned, a dedicated information security program was established in May of 2014 with legislative approval of additional resources. We've hired staff, including our chief information security officer and an information security architect. We've implemented 24/7 security monitoring service to more proactively monitor potential threats and respond more quickly. We have improved the management of our desktops and mobile devices to make them both easier to manage and more secure. We're currently conducting a data lifecycle assessment to better target our security activities. These are some of the key activities planned for the upcoming biennium. We will conduct risk assessments to aid in prioritization, establishing a comprehensive security framework, and update our policies and practices. We'll continue to identify and implement technical infrastructure improvements, including proactive monitoring, patching, and replacement of aged and out-of-date technical systems. We will continue to conduct due diligence assessments on third-party service providers and update our incident response plan. As always, we continue to work to raise employee awareness, as all employees have an important role in information security. The data lifecycle process assessment that I described previously will help us target our awareness program to based on the information that individuals' employees use in their jobs every day, so that they understand what they use and how they as an individual need to protect it. Now I'd like to turn the presentation back over to Cora.
So the next set of projects that I'd like to talk about relate to our cash management improvement and renewal program. And to provide some brief additional context, the cash management program itself focuses on optimizing the use of cash for our agency and local government partners. We act as the banking services provider for state agencies, including providing a host of banking services for those agencies via agreements with our financial services providers. We provide a one-to-many relationship instead of having to rely on many-to-many relationships across the agencies. And this drives efficiencies in both service delivery and in statewide pricing. We also protect public funds through adherence to public funds laws, as well as industry security and regulatory requirements. We provide our customers with timely, accurate account information and facilitate the actual movement of monies, currently through our own systems, though that will change based on two of the projects that we're about to discuss in more detail in a moment. We also operate the Oregon Short-Term Fund and the Local Government Investment Pool as short-term cash investment vehicles, again, for state agencies and local governments. Agency funds are there by default, and local governments choose whether or not to participate in the program or not. So a few years ago, we began to face the need to replace several of our critical management cash management systems. We recognized the value to be had by creating a continuous improvement approach to that replacement instead of simply waiting for failure or near failure of those systems and then acting. Waiting into that critical end-of-life moment can result in additional risks and costs associated with replacement of those systems. The resulting cash management improvement and renewal program is aimed at supporting ongoing services to our customers by balancing innovation opportunities against risk awareness and resource capacity. And that's resource capacity both at Treasury and related to the agencies and local governments that we support. The program's also focused on adapting our services to meet increasing and ever-changing stakeholder needs.
So this is a simplified diagram of our cash management systems. As you can see from the color-coded diagram, we have a mix of purchased and internally developed systems. Many of these were put in place in the late 90s. These are highly integrated systems with transactions flowing between them. The systems handle time-sensitive financial transactions and have high security requirements. Phoenix, in the center box, is a purchase system which serves as the repository for managing our DDA or demand deposit accounts in general ledger. The operations, or the big blue circle, is a custom application written in a language called Power Builder. It plays a key role as a kind of middleware managing the flow of transactions between the various systems. Power Builder is an older language, very popular in the late 90s. It's very challenging to find staff with this expertise. Not quite as bad as COBOL, but not really much easier. So. We currently have two staff with Power Builder expertise, and both of them are eligible to retire. I'm sure it's a common problem.
Well, I can program in either of those two languages, you, and I'm already retired, so.
I'll be asking you about Power Builder expertise soon. All recent and new development is done in .NET. There are many challenges with these applications, including system failures and lack of vendor support due to their age. Our business processes are designed around these legacy systems, which limits our ability to adapt to industry trends and implement desired services. The increasing volume and diversity of automated financial transactions is growing and is ever more difficult to support with aging technology. I've already spoken about the challenges supporting Power Builder. Our database administrator just retired, and three other members of the application staff are eligible as well. You may recall we have 6.5 in that team. Customer expectations continue to rise. People want what they get from their own banks. The age of these systems also presents significant security challenges.
So during the 2013 legislative session, the legislature approved Policy Package 102 for the 2013-15 biennium. It contained a business process, continued a business process mapping project that we had initiated with one-time savings and a single limited duration position, and it provided permanent staffing to acknowledge the ongoing renewal program that we spoke about earlier. Staffing resources in the policy package included those dedicated to ongoing project management and business analysis efforts, but also bolstered critical daily operations so that we can adequately use subject matter experts as we evaluate and replace our business and technology systems and processes. And Treasury committed to use industry best practices and standards throughout all phases of the renewal program. POP 102 for this current legislative cycle relates directly to three individual projects that are being governed under the Cash Management Improvement and Renewal Program. ACH, that's the systems that are in red or pink. The Local Government Investment Pool, again, primarily the systems and processes in blue. And then our core banking systems, which are those that are largely in gray. The policy package at the governor's recommended budget phase is a placeholder. We're very much in the final definition stage for purposes of what our ultimate ask will be to the Ways and Means Committee. With that in mind, each of the projects is in a slightly different place. The ACH and LGIP had the highest priority and are thus the farthest along. The core banking systems will be initiated in the current, in the upcoming 2015-17 biennium. And the graphic on the next page outlines the initial timelines that we provided to the committee last session as we discussed the initial plans. The areas in green are those actions or milestones that are largely completed for the ACH and LGIP projects, and I'll detail those next here. And the areas in blue are those that are yet to come, and I apologize if you can't read them very well from where you are. You'll see the overlap between the projects. As we finish up the first two, we'll be certainly kicking off the next. And from a more detailed project perspective, this is what you really want to know. For the ACH Business Systems Renewal Project, we completed the business case in August of 2014 for this project. It recommends the transform alternative, which is moving from receiving, processing, and distributing critical ACH, that's electronic funds transmission data, within our own systems, as we currently do, and instead skipping that middleman role, moving that functionality directly to our banking partner, who already is required to play a critical role. By law and industry regulation, our Treasury Management Services provider already has to play the role as our originating depository financial institution, meaning that today the data comes from agencies to us and to that provider and then goes to the network. Tomorrow, if you will, the data simply won't come to us. It will go directly to the provider and then to the ACH network. When our current systems were originally designed, there was a lack of industry product availability and cost reasonableness. This simply is no longer an issue. The products and services that support this functionality are readily available and at a reasonable cost. The pace of ongoing regulatory and industry change is also a challenge for us to keep up with, while financial institutions have to keep up with it because they have to do that in order to serve all of their customers, and they have the resources to be able to do so. And finally, the risk of having the data within our four walls simply outweighs now any other potential value that we may have added at a point in the past. We're currently in the initial stages of implementation. Again, the business case was completed in August 2014. We have just completed our work breakdown structure for the project itself. Our initial QA and QA risk assessment was just completed and will be delivered to us, I believe, at the end of this week. Okay. We're in contract negotiation with our Treasury Management Services provider, and our budget ask will be presented to our Ways and Means Subcommittee when we sit before them at the end of the month. The local government investment pool project is very similar and actually interrelated with the ACH project. One distinction is the improvement of the actual service delivery method in addition to the core functionality. Currently, our local government customers have no online option to access our systems, utilizing a failing voice response system only. The replacement approach will provide an online access as well. Like the ACH project, the LGIP business case was completed in August of 2014. As you see here, the recommendation was also to use a transform approach, essentially to buy the services from our treasury management services provider. And also, as shown here, the reasons for that decision are all very similar to the ACH project. It's generally at the same phase as the ACH project, but it is planned for a later implementation. This is in part because of capacity to implement multiple projects within Treasury at the same time, and in part because the solution, while hosted by our Treasury Management Services partner, does require some configuration and customization before implementation. That's not true for the product that we're buying, the service that we're buying for ACH. It simply is a turn it on, buy the service, no configuration, no customization at all. The third project within the Cash Management Improvement and Renewal Program is for core banking systems. Again, these are the systems that were in gray, the systems that track individual account activity and balances. Remember, again, they were at the center of that diagram. A vendor-provided solution sat there, and around it a variety of custom-developed and other vendor-provided solutions as well. We will initiate the business case development during the 2015-17 biennium. A variety of alternatives will be considered, but a hybrid solution is likely due to the unique nature of the state of Oregon's needs. We act as a bank, but we must also interact with the administrative and accounting requirements of the State of Oregon agencies and the Department of Administrative Services, a requirement that's not really necessary for most actual banks sitting on the outside. Your bank, for example, doesn't care about how you tackle your accounting needs. You simply get the banking services from them that you get, and you're on your own to figure out how to connect that with your accounting and other administrative needs. As a single set of public agencies and entities, we must interface with DAS and the other state agencies, so those requirements have to interact. We will continue during the 2015-17 biennium mitigation activities. You heard Nancy talk about the number of staff that are ready to retire, vendor support issues, and the technical code language support issues. So we'll continue to put mitigating actions in place to address those while we create the business case and ultimately move towards implementation. Any request for an actual implementation project and the costs associated with it would be in a separate ask to the legislative body. It will not be at the Ways and Means Committee later this month or, frankly, for this biennium. It would come either in the 2016 legislative session or at an emergency board in the interim. The final project that we want to briefly mention to you today relates to our investment program. And while it is a project not under my area of responsibility or Nancy's, it is, while complex, also simplistic enough in scope for me to give you a very high-level overview. Notably, the underlying purpose of the project is to enhance trade support and provide additional operational services to those staff that are managing trade activity and the related set of controls and reporting activity that support those trades. In general, those activities are currently provided via multiple externally hosted solutions or are simply not provided in a meaningful way at all. The project would transition the activities to a single comprehensive and still externally hosted solution. The IT impact would be minimal, including some internal infrastructure preparation and data-related activities. And the target completion for the project is in September of 2015. And with that, we are available to answer questions.
Questions? I see no questions. All right. Thank you very much for your presentation.
Thank you.
Chair Riley, Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. Next up, we have the Oregon Secretary of State, and again, they'll give an information technology overview of their agency. And again, please remember to introduce yourself for the record. Thank you.
Co-Chair Riley, Co-Chair Nathanson, my name is Robert Taylor. I'm the Deputy Secretary of State. With me today is Chris Mullen. He is our Information Systems Director. What I would like to do is just give a very brief reminder for the record, not so much for the committee, of what the Secretary of State's agency does. And then I will introduce Mr. Mullen. So, as you know, we are the Chief Elections Officer of the state. We are the auditor of public funds. We're the first stop for Oregon businesses and the keeper of our shared history through the archives. So we have a very broad and diverse set of responsibilities, each of which is served by our information services team led by Mr. Mullen. So it is a diverse task for Chris. We have three strategic initiatives to engage Oregonians, innovate for the future, and deliver effective results. So we are always trying to find ways to serve our customers better, and a lot of that means serving them online. For the first time this past year, for example, our online business registries eclipsed 50% of our overall registries. So the first time more than half of our customers registered online. So we have crossed the Rubicon with them, and it's only going to keep going. So we need to meet our customers where they are. They are online, and Chris is helping us connect with them. Mr. Mullen served 8 years in the Air Force doing information technologies for them. He left as a senior airman and then did nearly a decade and a half of private service related to the military. He has extensive information technology experience. He is the one reason I sleep well at night when I think of our own information technology projects. So, Chris, please take it away.
Thank you. Co-Chair Riley, Co-Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity. My name is Chris Mullen. I'm the Chief Information Officer for the Secretary of State. Our IT vision is to support the agency in meeting its customers' expectations and business goals by delivering innovative, secure, effective, and dependable information services. This is our motto, this is our creed, this is what we go by day to day. Our IT support overview, this slide is to illustrate how ISD is the engine that drives business, or as Robert, our deputy, put it, we are the tide that rises the boats, that raises the boats. I really like that one. Each division has its own unique set of customers. Each division has its own unique set of applications, and they are completely diverse from one another. And as such, we have dedicated project managers to each of those divisions, as well as application administrators, developers, and business analysts to each of those divisions. And I'll show you a chart on that later. Also in a later chart, I'll be talking a little bit more about each of these applications and what they do for the state. Most of these applications are built in-house, but there are some applications like OCVR where we outsource that development work. It's actually done by HP. And some of the applications are out-of-the-box solutions, which still require configuration, and they still require some back-end administration, creating user logins and those kinds of things. Our network has about 900 unique pieces of software running on it, anything from little tools, utilities, to applications. But this chart specifically demonstrates some of those larger applications. That's easy for you to read, I'm sure. I liked treasuries a little bit better, and I think I'll do that next time. But this captures really every FTE on the team right now. We have the team separated by functional areas. We have a security officer. We have two testing engineers for our testing QA services. Our infrastructure services, which is networking, database administration, server administration, help desk. It's all under infrastructure. Then we have a web social media services team that handles our Secretary of State blog, as well as our web pages. And then the application development team, which I had talked about earlier, which is a project manager, business analyst, developers. On a monthly basis, we have about 617,000 unique visitors to our websites and about 836,000 unique page views. We have about 34,000 HTML pages and 6,320 PDF documents, everything from audits, papers, to elections, information, and things of that nature. We have 15 network devices, including two firewalls and two local traffic managers. And we just brought in a 100 terabyte storage area network this biennium. We have four physical, but 40 virtual Microsoft servers, and eight physical and 50 virtual Solaris servers, and seven Linux boxes as well. Our applications are built in Java with the Oracle database backend. Any questions on that? Okay, this chart illustrates our current biennium budget and the ARB for 15-17. In the far left column, I've listed our total budget and then broken it out by general fund, other fund, and then some of our specific packages. Package 171 was our Oregon business registration enhancements. It went from Central Business Registry to now the Oregon Business Registry, and it had several enhancements in it. And then package 171 was the staffing with that package. 172 was the actual work to be done, which included some outsourced application development work as well. Package 100 is the big package that we're asking for the next biennium, and I'll talk a little bit about that package. And then package 102 is the next set of enhancements for OBR going into 15-17. This demonstrates how those FTEs in that org chart are actually spread across the different divisions across the agency. If you look along the bottom of the chart, it illustrates the FTE level deltas from the last biennium to the 15-17 biennium if package 100 were to pass and get approved. The dark purple represents the level of business staff within each division, and the light purple represents the 10 IT positions that we're requesting in package 100. The general takeaway from this chart is that while the positions are housed in ISD due to their classification levels, they actually are supporting across the divisions. As I said, each division has its application housed with a project manager, business analyst, and developers in there. Any questions on that? So package 100, this is our IT staffing package. The request was designed to help us fulfill the agency's need to continue to further secure our applications and infrastructure while continuing to maintain innovation and sustaining the existing operation. The LFO, when we first presented this package, asked us to break out the positions by in order of priority and talk about risk and need. And as I looked at these, each position came with its own unique set of needs that were meeting a particular risk. We didn't feel that any of these in any particular order were less or more important. They were all important. But nevertheless, we did our best to try to rank them in some sort of order. Clearly, we wanted to get a security analyst in, but we also need a systems architect to help us try to standardize our applications and take a more standardized approach. One of the problems with having your project managers physically separated into those divisions is they also have a tendency to build things the way they want to build them. And as a developer, I'm sure you can appreciate that there are multiple ways to develop any particular functionality.
But my way is the best way.
Exactly. And that never happens on our intra team. So,
I see.
Yeah. So we need a systems architect to kind of oversee and coach some of our developers, hear the differences, and make decisions on what really is the best and most efficient approach. We also need a couple of additional Java developers. Elections, for example, we do Auristart has 8 separate modules in that application, and we have one developer assigned to that. And as you can imagine, with voters pamphlet and some of the other deadlines with that application, we oftentimes have missed family holidays. I think last Thanksgiving, they worked through Thanksgiving, they worked through New Year's. So it'd be very helpful to get an additional person in there to offset that workload. We don't have a web project lead. We currently have a developer in there. We currently have a content manager in there, but we don't have anybody that's doing initial triage and providing some oversight. We need some additional business analysts. The election system, again, Auristart doesn't have a business analyst. And I'm sure you've heard this through other briefings, that business analyst is your technical liaison to between the project manager and the development team.
And we can tell that Auristart doesn't have one of those.
Duly noted. We also need an additional developer with Corp and an infrastructure manager. We have 12 FTEs providing networking support, service desk, and we don't have anybody providing any oversight other than the IT director for that team. And then a web usability tester. And I think you guys might find this interesting. As technology improves these days, there are how many different browsers to get to your applications? You've got Internet Explorer, Chrome, Safari, Firefox, and then you have multiple versions of each of those. What becomes increasingly difficult is how do you test your application against Internet Explorer 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, Chrome version, whatever, Firefox, .whatever. And so we want to bring somebody in-house who will be focused on ensuring that all of those different browsers will render our applications appropriately.
Yes, Representative Nierman.
Thanks, Chair Rennie. So on that side there, that $1.5-ish million of other funds, what's the source of that?
So we do an assessment internally against the divisions for our support, and so the funding comes from that. Audits, corporation when they register businesses, some of that money goes into our assessment to help us provide support, and so that's where that money would come from.
So when can I follow? So when you audit someone, you charge them for the audit then?
So, Representative Nierman, the Robert Taylor, Deputy Secretary of State, each of our business divisions has a separate source of funding. So our audits division does issue assessments to executive branch agencies. That's how audits receives its funding. Archives receives its funding in a similar way through assessments. The corporation division, meanwhile, generates most, if not all, of its revenue through fees it charges customers. And then our elections division is largely a general fund, federal fund agency. And then the way Chris's division, ISD, is funded is through internal assessments of our business divisions. Okay. So they show up as other funds in the budget.
Good. I get that. Thanks.
So speaking a little bit about governance, this is our governance model as an agency. and project ideas, priorities for the agency, and business strategy. All of these issues are discussed at the management council level at the top in the green box. It's made up of executive management and all of the directors. At the beginning of each biennium, we have a list of projects or ideas for projects that we then whiteboard. We have actually a sticky board that each director will stick which what they see as their top five strategic projects. And then we weigh that against all the projects to make the determination on which ones we approve as an agency going into the biennium. Throughout the year, the director of the division as well as the CIO will meet to discuss any issues with those projects, any budget issues or scheduling issues with those projects. And then we also discuss project priorities. Once the again, the agency has made the decision, these are the top five, the division director gets to make the decision on which of those top five they're going to address first. And then they discuss the, with the division director, the application administrator, and the project manager, they make decisions on if we're going to do this project, what are the top five task delegations, who's getting them, and in what order. So we're going to do rollout number one for this date, and what's that going to have in it? That's discussed between the division director and the project manager, as well as the application administrator. So that's the governance of projects in general. Breaking it down a little bit, these are, again, internal to each division. There's a team made up of a project manager, business analyst, application administrator, and then the stakeholders. This chart demonstrates not only the communication path for requirements coming up from the stakeholders to the project manager, but also as issues occur and requests need to be passed down, they go from the project manager down to the stakeholder. As a model, clearly, you know, this doesn't capture the complexities of the communication, and this isn't, you know, the stakeholders can't talk to the project managers, but there are times where certain decisions, key decisions need to be made, and we always refer back to this chart to make sure that the right people are sitting at the table to make those decisions. Another PowerPoint, death by PowerPoint slide. This covers some of our major custom-built applications. Again, not all of our applications, but the ones we're either building in-house or outsourced like OCBR. We have one, two, three, four, five business divisions. And one of those is administration, which is HR, business services division, which is our finance procurement. And then ISD, we have the deposit interface systems, which is an application for our service product financial transactions. Oracle, or Oregon Identity Manager, which is how do our users get into the applications. Muni, which is under audits, it's payments and information about audit reports by municipalities. And then Archives has three, the public record search, the Oregon Historical Records Index, online rules filing. Corporation's big one is the Oregon Business Registry, as well as Business Entity Registration Info, BIC, and Business Express. And OBR, in a nutshell, is the online, it's a way a business can go in and register. And as people register their businesses, that information flows into Berry. So ultimately, Berry is that system that keeps all of that information. If somebody comes in and files on paper, there's a filing officer that takes that filing and then hand manually inputs it into Berry. Business Express, there was a bill in 2011 that passed. It's a business wizard that will talk someone through who just has questions about how to start a business, where do I register, who do I need licenses through, and it asks questions to help you know how to get where, what, who to refer to. We also have the Notary Public System, the Uniform Commercial Code, and then in elections we have Oristar and OCVR. And as I mentioned earlier with Oristar, there's eight separate modules in their campaign financing, candidate filing, complaints and violations, contact tracking, et cetera. And OCVR is our statewide voter registration list with signature verification and ballot preparation. Current 13-15 projects, this slide is our currently ongoing, either completed or to be completed in this biennium. As I mentioned earlier, we had the business registry enhancements. We saved the agency $20,000 recently by taking what was a customized solution, a software as a service for our notary education. It was provided by Adobe. We were paying about $20,000 a year for that. We built something in-house using existing technology, FileMaker as a back end, and we just launched that last week. It was our first application that was cradle-to-grave security assessments done, penetration testing done, which made for an interesting dynamic. And there were some pretty good lessons learned from that with regards to how contracts should be written, ensuring that when a contractor provides code, that it meets industry best practices for security, as well as, you know, just when you think you're done, we're going to be sending you back about 9-10 vulnerabilities that we found in your code, and they're going to need to be fixed by the deadline. So interesting dynamics there, but good lessons learned with that application. Voters pamphlet was published. Audit search modernization, again, this is the ability to search through work papers on past audits. Administrative rules filing and search enhancements, and security upgrades to the applications. We have upgraded several parts of our applications. We've also, going down into operational projects, we've implemented an application security module, which is watching the front door, internet protocol intelligence, which is watching malicious traffic, and the implementation of RiskSense for vulnerability management, which is broken out by network scanning and reporting, Nessus, and application scanning. And so those two applications have been really cool because you can see these dashboard views of broken out however you want to see it. If you want to look at your application and how many vulnerabilities, how many critical vulnerabilities there are, and it even provides potential fix actions for those. So not only do you get a view at any point in time that's near real time of your existing vulnerabilities, but it also demonstrates your get well plan and how far you've come from the beginning. You start out with a baseline, and that of course makes some people uncomfortable in the application development world and the network world because you're opening up those rocks and looking underneath. But as I've assured my staff, that anytime you have an audit, anytime you have an assessment, it's good for the agency, it's good for the division, because you have to know where you are, and you can only get better from there. So those particular two tools have been amazing. We also implemented an enterprise wireless solution. As I mentioned earlier, new storage area network, new switches, firewalls, a new help desk tool. Which also had some good lessons learned. We looked at the workflow, how do calls come in, how do we escalate to different tiers of support, and we also implemented some automated cross-browser platform testing, which removes the human element, where we can run some scripts in the background to check the usability of a new application. Those are the current projects. Going into the
Senator Whitsitt.
Thank you. Two things.
Do you want me to go back one slide?
The two things I'm particularly interested in is your administrative rules filing and search enhancements. We know that there's each biennium we have about 15,000 new enhanced, deleted administrative rules. When I ask how many administrative rules there actually were, your good director of archives begged me not to ask you to let her estimate because it would have taken you forever to count. I really have no idea how many administrative rules there are. And I know that she has some wonderful ideas about how you could put a searchable database together where you could people could actually find out when and where they are violating all the laws of Oregon. And the other interesting thing, I think, is ORSTAR. My understanding is you're working on upgrading that. I believe that OurStar is a candidate for the most opaque and user-unfriendly site in the nation. And I, so are you planning on, with OurStar, are you planning on replacing it, or are you, what are you planning on doing there?
Senator Whitsitt, thank you for those comments. I do appreciate both of them on the rules and on OurStar. On OurStar, on Monday, we're going to come back to our usual Ways and Means Subcommittee, of which you are a part. And that is one of the POPs that's going to be discussed, is OurStar and what our plan is for that. As Chris, I'll kind of give you a little preview right now. The so as Chris mentioned, there are 8 modules in OurStar. And typically when we think of OurStar, we think of campaign finance. That's where the filing, and then maybe candidate filings, and now maybe some voter pamphlet filings where candidates do that. But there's others. There's election night reporting, where that's where you get, when you go online election night, that's where you see the results. And there's My Vote and contact tracking and others. So what we're planning to do is we brought in a consultant to look at those 8 modules and tell us which of those we can easily and efficiently spin off as off-the-shelf solutions. So one example of that, there's vendors out there that off-the-shelf do election night reporting software. That is, it's very good, it's very useful. I've seen examples of it. So that might be an example. There are other vendors that do campaign finance applications that we might be able to use, we might not be able to use because of Oregon's unique laws around campaign finance. So first off, we have to have the consultant come in and say, look, these three or four modules are so unique to what you're doing in Oregon, you have to build them in-house. These others are, you know, you can go out and buy them just as well as you can build them. So go do that. And what we're going to ask the subcommittee to do is to allocate the funding for the OurStar package, but then not release the money to us until we come back to you in the February session and give you the consultant's report and explain the plan. At that point, we would hope that the money would be released to us and that we could then, from February 2016 through 16 and 17, be able to have an OurStar upgrade ready for the 2018 election. Because that's the other big problem we face in our elections software, especially OurStar, where it can take more than a year to implement, and so we need to build into our process enough time for us to develop the plan, show you the plan, have you approve the plan, and then once you release the money to us, give us the time to implement it before the 2018 election. So that's the long-term plan for OurStar. We also have a shorter-term plan to help kind of get us through the 2016 election while we're executing the long-term plan.
Thank you.
Okay. One other thing I wanted to touch on briefly, I just thought of as I was flipping through this, is several years ago we brought in a portfolio management tool called AtTask, and they changed their name here recently to Workforce. And I think that particular tool has really helped our agency with regards to governance, because it has, for example, when a project becomes an idea, there's a status for that. When we move the project from idea to active, there's a status for that. If the project gets put on hold, you put it on hold. If it's dead, it's dead. But it also tracks GASB 51 accountancy. So I can do a total cost of ownership against each project. So if someone were to ask me at any given time, how much did OBR cost? How much is OBR? How much does it cost up to date? I can give you a very accurate number, because we're plugging in the hours that the developers are spending based on their salary, as well as the project manager or any other stakeholder that's spending time in the design phases or the development of a particular application. We can also track in a dashboard whether we're behind a project, behind budget, you know, ahead of schedule, all of those kinds of things. And not just for those strategic high visibility projects, but we can also track sustainment and maintenance for any given biennium. So as somebody goes in and they do some firewall upgrades or something that maybe didn't rise to the level of a project requiring a charter and all the documentation, it was somebody going in and doing some of that work, or we found a bug in Aurastar that needs to be fixed and it's, you know, takes a couple of weeks to do that. That sustainment and maintenance is also captured in buckets in that portfolio management tool. Audit or our internal finance department has reports that they pull from that if we get audited to show that we're in compliance with GASB 51. So pretty cool project. I'm interested to see where DAS, I know DAS is in the process of bringing theirs in. I'm very interested in participating with their conversations and seeing where they land. Because if it's a tool that I think we could roll into, then we'll probably join into that portfolio management tool. Future projects in 15-17, the big one for us strategically is Motor Voter. I say the term big just in referring to the visibility of it, not necessarily the technical functionality of it. A lot of that background and technology, we believe, already exists. We just need to leverage that existing technology and find the matching data sets and move that forward. So that's one of our big projects. We're going to continue our business registry enhancements, one of which is license directory, where going into OBR, you'll be able to actually get your Portland City license and some of the other cities. I think Bend is second on the list for that. As Senator Whitsitt mentioned earlier, the search modernization for several of our applications, PDFs, work papers, and the like, as well as Berry modernization. We had a major web facelift last biennium, and we're looking to go to 2.0 in this upcoming biennium, another reason why we need that web project lead. We are also looking at some upgrades, as we mentioned, in Aurastar, the Statement of Organization modernization, online rules filing with archives. We need to continue our work with security on the infrastructure side, compliance tracking. And I think probably one of the biggest challenges from an IT perspective with the state right now is that one. It's compliance tracking. It's knowing what exactly you have on your systems and then knowing what patch level they're at. And not just on desktops, not necessarily on servers, but utilities that a developer might download and have sitting on a machine somewhere. And what's the plan to get compliant on that particular patch set? So if you're using Adobe Photoshop version 1.2 and there's a vulnerability known with that, what's the plan to get to 1.3? And somebody needs to track that. Somebody needs to ensure that your infrastructure, your network, your platforms are in compliance. So we're looking to increase that and improve that, as well as standardized security testing and remediation in applications. What's the best fix action for a particular function or an exploit that's found in an application? What's the approach, knowing that there's 10 different ways to code that? And providing some standards for that. Also, little things like if you go to Yahoo and you plug in an address, is it the same as going to Amazon.com? And so we're looking at our applications and asking those questions. If you have your email address on this application, is it the same as putting in your address or your email address on this application? We're also, again, as I mentioned earlier, looking at web browser compatibility of our applications. And right now, what I see happening in a lot of state agencies across the country is they develop what's called a requirements page that at the front end of their landing page, which says, if you want to use our applications, we render with Internet Explorer 8 or Chrome version such and such or Safari version such and such. And we'd like to, you know, at some point get away from that. So no matter where you are, even if you're using a 28.8 modem up in the mountains, you can still get to those. I'm stretching. That's some technology that we need to improve on. We want to look at mobile device technology, which by that I mean rendering our applications for smart devices, for iPads, for phones. And I used to be of the mindset that people would never do that. Nobody would ever go register their business from their iPad. But I'm finding that is not the case, that people are using their smartphones and tablets and iPads for those very, very same things. And looking at our portfolio management, AtTask has been great. But again, DAS is bringing theirs in, and we might want to join with them and utilize that tool, and maybe there's some cost savings involved in that. So we're actually looking at the way we do portfolio management from the ground up, and I think that that's also a very valuable lesson that I've learned in my career is don't buy a tool to fix the problem, process the problem, and then look for a tool that meets the needs. And that's what we're doing right now with portfolio management. And that is all I have for this presentation. Does anybody have any questions for me?
Representative Nearman.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. So I just have a few little questions here. So for one function that you have that I can foresee that possibly overlaps mm-hmm. is with the archives department or with the state library. Do you interface with them in a software way? I'll just mm-hmm. talk software in a software way, or do you have any kind of overlap with them, or are there any possible gains in efficiency that you can see by any kind of overlap with those agencies?
Co-chairs and Representative Nearman, I'm not sure. I'm not at liberty right now. I don't know the archive systems that well. I can certainly find out for you, and I can get that back to you. I can get that information back to
I'd
you.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, thanks. Absolutely.
There's another one. So I know you had a data breach, I think it was in spring of last year, and when that happened, I was reading a kind of a post-mortem on that. One thing that was kind of interesting to me, at least. It said that 60% of the hits that you get on OurStar are from robots and not actually even an actual browser. And I'll even admit that I've hit your thing with some robots before myself, but I noticed I don't make eye contact with you when I said that. But what that to me that speaks of an opportunity. So if you're going to be rototilling OurStar, is it possible you can put some APIs in there and make a respectable human being out of people like me?
So co-chairs, Representative Nearman, great question. Yes, that's one of the technologies we're looking at. Currently, as you know, we use reCAPTCHA for ensuring that a person is a person when they use the application. Mm-hmm. There are some technologies on the website that we're looking at potentially implementing that will remove even the need to use that. That's something that's being weighed. But it's a great question, and there's a lot of different ways that you can address that. IP intelligence is really a kind of our sledgehammer to keep out the bad people. But you also bring up another interesting point, which is, for example, screen scraping. And some of that stuff is very legitimate traffic. It's very legitimate people who utilize that data for legitimate business purposes. And so what we've struggled with in our agency is, how do you differentiate between the quote-unquote good guys and the bad guys? And some of that stuff is incredibly difficult. Another example is we have people that are on blacklists for IPs, and it turned out that 2 years ago, whoever had that IP address was doing some nefarious stuff out on the internet. You got a Comcast account, you just happened to end up with that IP address, and now you can't get into our applications. And these are things that happen on a daily basis. What's really frightening to me is when I look at the firewall logs or I look at the IP intelligence logs and just how much how many bots are out there trying to attack, you know, just our applications. So it's something we take very seriously. And yes, APIs are one of the options that we're looking at.
Good. I'm joking when I say you make respectable people out of people like me who run robots to get the data like that. But it's public information, and it's
absolutely.
I shouldn't have to put on my black trench coat to go get the data that's out there. But can I ask another question?
Go ahead.
So when the last version, it's probably the web 1.0 that you're talking about, the web 2.0. You chose Silverlight as part of your UI, your presentation software there. And that was surprising to me for a couple of different reasons. One is you're a Java Oracle shop, and Silverlight's kind of from the other side. It's a Microsoft product. And second of all is that, as far as I know, and you can correct me if you think differently, Silverlight's kind of a little bit of a dying technology. And we joke about this all the time, and I trade grins with Senator Riley and stuff, and everybody knows that COBOL is the official language of this committee. But when I hear agency after agency say, oh yeah, we all of our stuff's written in COBOL, and there's only three guys that know how to do it, and they're half dead, and all this kind of stuff. And then when you choose a technology like Silverlight, that makes me wonder, can you talk about the process that you went through to choose that?
Yes, co-chairs, Representative Nierman. Unfortunately, the decision was made before I became the IT director.
So you're off the hook.
but I, of course, I will do some digging on that as well, and I'll get back to you. You know what's interesting to me is that when you look at IT staffing and the personalities of IT staffing, you look at somebody that does network administration, somebody that does programming, somebody that does web technology, you end up with a very different subset of personalities in each of those areas. And what I will say about web technologists is they are a creative bunch. And I would assume that we use a lot of different utilities on the web technology side with both with our blogging and some of the development. We use not Cold Fusion, Dreamweaver for some of our web page building. And honestly, I would assume that it was just based on whoever the web team lead at the time was and their comfort zone with that particular utility. But again, I'll dig into that, and I can provide that information back to you.
Thanks, I appreciate that. Yeah. That's not really the right answer to the question, but anyway, I mean, if it's a truthful answer, that's fine. But that's a kind of a troubling answer there. That if it's just the guy who's the lead and he's, oh yeah, this is cool stuff, let's do it. That's maybe not the way to do that. I don't mean to pick on you, because I suspect that this goes on more often than it should in other agencies and stuff. So it's just yours, I just happened to notice whatever. So.
I will say that with regards to what goes on those 900 pieces, we do have software baselines, and there is a process that we have in-house to get new software added or new applications added. There's a change management process that people have to go through. It's based off of a purchase request form. That way it gets to the service desk, then it gets shotgunned out to each of the functional areas, security, networking, to make sure that software doesn't have any known security issues, that it's going to play well on our network. So, you know, even though I may sound like it was somewhat, yeah, he brought it in from home, and I assure you, yeah, there was some thought put into using that utility. But again, it does go back to the compliance issue, which is, if you have so much different types of software out there, how do you make the determination on what the best piece of software is? And then how do you track that to make sure that it plays well with other things? And I think that's something that I know we as an agency need to continue to develop.
Good, thanks. I look forward to your answer on that.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Anything else? No. It looks like it. Thank you very much. Appreciate your presentation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, Sean.
Co-Chair Riley, Co-Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, just some logistics. As you may know or may recall, notice went out about community hearings or community meetings of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. And so those meetings are happening on Tuesdays and Thursdays. A number of the members of this committee are likely going to need to leave at 5 or just prior to 5. So we're gonna try to be very flexible with our schedule over the next couple of weeks. Case in point, next Tuesday we will not have a meeting of the IT subcommittee. We do plan to meet on Thursday, and we'll just play each week by ear. I'll be working with Representative Nathanson and Senator Riley to get information to you just as soon as possible about the schedule upcoming. Then the other issue, wanted you to know, we are contemplating some work sessions coming up, and so stay tuned for some more active meetings of the committee in the future.
Okay, well, with that, we're going to adjourn. Thank you.